right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today, yeah, it's Thursday, all right. Today is November 20th, 2025. And our top story this morning, of course, is NVIDIA earnings. Another magnificent quarter from NVIDIA. NVIDIA reported last night they beat expectations as expected. Really good numbers from NVIDIA. Before we get all the way into this, I got to do the whole CYMA thing, guys. I am short NVIDIA, as I mentioned earlier this week. Those are puts that are almost certainly going to open deep in the red this morning, but I digress. So let's talk about the numbers. Revenue, $57 billion. That is beating expectations for $55 billion, up 62% year over year. Big growth for revenue. Earnings per share of $1.30 versus earnings per share expected of $1.26. Look, really good numbers here. Data center revenue, $51.2 billion versus expectations of $49.3. Hey, let's stop reading. Let's stop scrutinizing. Let's just YOLO into the stock, right? Let's forget the cluster of red flags that has not been so big since, Chairman Mao's 80th birthday party. Now, bro out your candles. I can't ignore red flags. I have to dig. That's what I do. I read. I don't just look at headlines and buy stocks. So let's talk about some of those red flags. First things first, Jensen Huang was talking about their insane demand, as always, overlooking that they manufacture it themselves by giving money to their customers. But they said that their GPUs were sold out. Oh, yeah, the Blackwells were sold out for months. Okay, well, if your GPUs are sold out, then how come your inventory rose to $19.8 billion? If you're sold out, you don't have almost $20 billion in inventory. That's kind of how selling out works. Your inventory goes to next to nothing. Also, they kept talking about this $500 billion backlog. They kept talking, oh, my God, the backlog, taking a cue right out of Oracle earnings, by the way, when Oracle reported their remaining performance obligations. Just take the sum of all the orders, regardless of whether people can pay or have the money or not. Report it all as one lump sum. Both in Jensen Huang and their CFO spent almost an hour talking about this big backlog. Then how come the fine print in your earnings release contained a statement that said there's no assurances that $100 billion investment in OpenAI is ever going to happen, or any of the other investments that they've promised? Why do they spend so much time talking about their $500 billion backlog and then failing to mention that in that very same document that they're talking about, they're saying we may not give our customers the money they need in order to make that backlog happen? That's another red flag. No mention of that during the cheerleading session. And of course, the press did not ask any questions about that either. Also, another red flag, cloud service commitments. Cloud service commitments, that's the GPU data center credits where, you know, NVIDIA is basically handing out coupons for free data center rentals from their own data centers, promises to rent back their own chips from their customers. Why did cloud service commitments more than double over the last two quarters from $10 billion to $26 billion? If the demand is so insane, why do you have to keep giving money to your own customers so they can afford your product? It's almost like the demand isn't really insane. It's almost like the demand has been fake all along. And of course, accounts receivable growth. I pointed this one out on X last night. Accounts receivable, guys, for accounting is dull and it's boring. I get it. That's basically product that you shipped that you haven't been paid for. And a sudden surge of accounts receivable can be indicative of channel stuffing, where you're like, quick, just shove some product out the door, send it to the customers. Who cares if they can pay? Take a look at CoreWeave's credit default swaps, by the way. Yeah, who cares if they can pay? Just book it as revenue. Well, accounts receivable for NVIDIA rose by $5.6 billion last quarter to $33 billion. 59% of the revenue NVIDIA just reported is accounts receivable, product shipped that they haven't been paid for yet. And that number grew by $5.6 billion. Now, remember, their revenue only beat by about $2 billion. So take away growth in product that they ship that they haven't been paid for, and this is a miss. So again, not proof of absolute fraud, but you got to view this in the context of NVIDIA's existing history and track record of accounting fraud. That is a big red flag. And now look, accounts receivable growing by $5 billion when their inventory grew by $5 billion also, that's kind of interesting. So NVIDIA is their own customer. Their customers owe them $5 billion, and they have $5 billion more GPUs. So is NVIDIA late paying themselves for their own product? Guys, I'm only half kidding here. Half kidding. It's not that ridiculous, is it? Is it? Okay. Also, we've got to talk about why are they no longer reporting geographic revenue by customer billing location? They suddenly changed how they report their revenue. And let me just preface this, that they changed how they reported their revenue about 2 years ago when President Biden made it illegal for them to sell their advanced GPUs to China. All of a sudden, they saw a huge surge in sales to Singapore, and they created this new line that doesn't exist anywhere in the world of accounting called customer geographic revenue by customer billing location. Nowhere in the world did that phrase exist anywhere before NVIDIA earnings about 2 years ago. And of course, as soon as sales to China become illegal, sales to Singapore surge by billions of dollars, which just means they were selling to Chinese companies. All they had to do was have those Chinese companies establish a front operation in Singapore where the bill could be sent to. Then they could ship the chips to Malaysia. From there, they'd get lost in a warehouse and sent on to China. And then, of course, when DeepSeek came out, everybody was like, oh, yeah, they have tens of thousands of NVIDIA GPUs. We all know that. After saying I was a conspiracy theorist for years for pointing this out, guys, all of a sudden, they're not reporting that anymore. They stopped reporting geographic revenue by customer billing location. Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that the Chinese just a few weeks ago ordered their firms to stop using NVIDIA chips, to stop buying NVIDIA chips? Maybe suddenly NVIDIA got rid of this cockamamie reporting idea because they had no way to explain a sudden drop in sales to Singapore that was coming. And so once again, they just changed the definitions in their accounting standards to hide the fact that they have been illegally selling GPUs to China this whole freaking time. And considering the military applications for this equipment and the fact that Jensen Huang is an American citizen of Taiwanese descent, that rises to the level of treason, in my opinion. And that whole Singapore-China thing, guys, I'm telling you, that is such a red flag. That is the biggest red flag since some girl's online dating profile under hobbies listed shopping and a son, Aiden, who is my world. Just run, run. That's all I'm telling you. Now, look, again, any one of these stories, guys, any one of these things could probably be explained away. And all the NVIDIA bros and the AI bros are on Twitter, and they've got an explanation for everything. Okay, maybe one of these things you can explain away, maybe two of them. All of these things, in the context of NVIDIA's documented prior history of accounting fraud, that is not a conspiracy, guys. Look it up. It's out there. They did it. They settled with the SEC. They faked their numbers. They have a history of doing it. All of that combined with this circle jerk round tripping scheme that you all said I was crazy for pointing out 2 years ago. And now it's so obvious that it's sitting on your face and there's no denying that something just doesn't smell right. Well, people are buying the stock right now. Let's see what the market does today. Something tells me there's going to be some profit taking. It would just be the punchline of the joke if we see the market close in the red today. Let's just say that way. Also, we got non-farm payrolls today. September jobs reports. It's nice of the government to get around to the jobs report, by the way. 119,000 jobs added. Big fat asterisk next to that non-farm payrolls report this morning, guys. Who knows what they did to the data, how flawed it might be after the circus in D.C. August jobs were revised down 26,000. Unemployment rose from 4.3 to 4.4%. Participation rate ticked up to 62.4 from 62.3. Not a great jobs report, not a terrible jobs report, but nobody's going to believe it. So it's kind of a non-story. We got Walmart earnings beat because they're attracting shoppers across incomes, which according to the translation of that is there's more poor people being forced to shop at Walmart because everybody's broke and the cost of living crisis has gotten so bad. We've got Bath and Body Works is getting absolutely crushed. Specialty retailers are just not doing good here. That stock's down double digit this morning on their earnings. Palo Alto beat. They said some crap about AI. They're buying another company. That stock is selling off a little bit this morning, just on too many acquisitions and not enough earnings growth. We've got a BlackRock credit CLO, BlackRock private credit CLO story this morning. Shout out to my friends at MacroEdge. MacroEdge, guys, loans going bad. And they're waiving management fees which is just a, you know, tested well in focus groups kind of way of saying we're robbing some of our investors in order to pay our other investors. And we're making it sound like it's coming out of our end, even though we lost you a bunch of money and we're charging you a fee for the service. We got Blue Owl has abandoned their plan to give investors a 20% haircut by merging two of their private credit funds. Things in private credit are getting worse fast here. Verizon is laying off 13,000 people, and they expect to complete these layoffs before the end of the year, which means thousands of people are going to lose their job right before Christmas. That's fun. More real estate stimmies in China. And stick around to the end of the show. There is a crazy story about the Olympics, about snowboarding, about drugs, murder, and even my channel. I kid you not. Stick around for the end. You guys are going to want to see this. Hey, let's shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. Come on back tomorrow. Have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every day. And right now, the S&P 500 is up big, 102 points to the upside, 1.5%. Some of that coming prior to after NVIDIA's earnings yesterday, but also a nice jump of about 20 or 30 points since the non-farm payrolls report came out. I'm not so sure that jobs report was the good news the market interprets it at, but between that and the NVIDIA earnings number go up this morning. The Dow is up 453 points or 0.98% to the upside. Again, another big jump up after the jobs report. And the NASDAQ leading the way higher, 484 points, up nearly 2% this morning. Let's see if the market can hang on to those gains. Something tells me we're going to see some profit taking at the open, but I could be wrong about that. The U.S. dollar index is higher by 5 basis points, 100.18. Little bit of Dixie volatility following the jobs report. The Forex market didn't quite know what to make of that one, but not a lot of movement in the dollar here today. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are mostly lower. The 30-year Treasury is the only one in the green there, 4.753, up just a fraction of a point. The 10-year, meanwhile, is down almost a half a point, 4.129. The 2-year yield, 3.575. That's off by 2 points and change. And the 1 month is pretty much unchanged here, down a fraction of a point at 3.934. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are kind of mixed here, down a little bit. Spot gold is up by $4, $4,082, 0.1% higher. Meanwhile, New York gold, the December COMEX futures at 4,082, pretty much the same number, unchanged here. We've got less than a dollar of arbitrage between the New York and the London price. Watch that one. Spot silver, meanwhile, lower by 24 cents or 0.47% in the red here, 51.11 for spot silver. COMEX futures for December at $50.86. That's up a penny or 0.04%. Not a lot of movement in metals this morning, but I still like the shiny. Copper, meanwhile, is up by 0.2%. Platinum, 0.17% higher. Palladium's up by 1.33%. And crude oil is off by about, or is higher by about 0.8% here, 46 cents to the upside, 59.71 for January WTI futures. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, this is kind of interesting here. We're seeing Bitcoin give up some of its gains. Now, we went really low. Let's set this to hourly candles so you can kind of follow what happened yesterday. We went really low yesterday. We were selling off all day. We went down as low as 88,000. Looks like 88,400 was the bottom yesterday. Then NVIDIA earnings came out, and Bitcoin rallied like crazy off of NVIDIA earnings up to about 93,000. Why does Bitcoin rally $5,000 on NVIDIA earnings? Somebody needs to explain that to me. I guess the algos are just like, all right, the AI bubble didn't burst. Buy everything up to and including Bitcoin. But now we're seeing that sell off a little bit here. Bitcoin giving up its gains back to 90,000, almost half of its post-NVIDIA earnings gains here. Is this foreshadowing some profit taking in the market today? I don't know. Keep an eye on that one. All right, let's talk about the big story this morning. NVIDIA's upbeat forecast soothes fears of AI market bubble. Do you feel soothed? I feel soothed. I don't know about you guys. NVIDIA delivered a surprisingly strong revenue forecast and pushed back on the idea that the AI industry is in a bubble, easing concerns that it had spread across the tech sector. The world's most valuable company expects sales of about $65 billion in the January quarter, roughly $3 billion more than analysts predicted, so the market liked the guidance. NVIDIA also said that a $500 billion revenue bonanza due in coming quarters may be even bigger than expected. We'll put a pin in that one. The revenue bonanza, even bigger than expected. Then explain this headline. NVIDIA says there is no assurance of final agreement with OpenAI despite $100 billion pact. Wait, the revenue bonanza. What's with this asterisk in the footnote that says the revenue bonanza might be all a bunch of bullshit? What? Oh, that's right. None of these people have the money to pay NVIDIA the money that they're promising. Ah, whatever. We can pencil whip our way out of that one. 2 months ago, NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang and OpenAI CEO Sam Altman stood side by side in San Jose, California to announce a historic agreement between the two leaders in AI. NVIDIA would invest $100 billion over a number of years, starting in 2026, as OpenAI's supercomputing facilities come online, the duo said. The timing of the buildouts and the cost of each data center weren't disclosed, but in NVIDIA's quarterly financial report on Wednesday, the chipmaker reminded investors that there's a big difference between an announcement and a contract. There is no assurance that we will enter into definitive agreements with respect to OpenAI opportunity or other potential investments, or that any investment will be completed on expected terms, NVIDIA said in the risk factor section of its quarterly filing. NVIDIA has been on an investing binge of late, putting its ever-expanding cash hoard to use and financially supporting companies that buy its graphics processing units or GPUs. In other words, they're buying their own chips. In addition to the OpenAI arrangement, NVIDIA on Wednesday highlighted its $5 billion commitment to invest in Intel during the quarter and its agreement this week to invest up to $10 billion in Anthropic. So they're basically saying, hey, guys, all these promises to buy our own chips, they might not happen. But, you know, don't worry about that. Just listen to minutes and minutes of constant rambling by Jensen and Kress about our revenue bonanza and our big backlog and remaining performance obligations. Let's talk about obligations, shall we? Shout out to my friend Kakashi on X, who posted this one yesterday. This is NVIDIA's multi-year cloud service agreements. All right, this is NVIDIA basically agreeing to rent back their own chips, paying for stakes in companies with data center credits, that magic funny money that the AI bubble uses to fake its revenue numbers. If the demand is so insane for these GPUs, then why is NVIDIA obligated to deliver $26 billion worth of those data center credits to its own customers? How come if the demand is so insane, these customers can't afford to buy this stuff without all these riders attached? And you'll notice, well, they didn't report it last quarter, but you'll notice the number has more than doubled since the first quarter of this year. In other words, the round-tripping scheme is getting worse and worse. Also noteworthy is the inventory. I saw a few versions of this chart going around. I believe Jack Farley was the original person who posted this chart. So shout out to Jack Farley for this one. If NVIDIA is sold out of their GPUs, and they told the demand is insane, we're sold out, then what is this $19.784 billion of inventory sitting on the shelf? If you're sold out, you shouldn't have almost $20 billion of inventory. What is it? A collection of artisan jellies and jams, Concord grape with AI? Well, what's on the shelf if you're sold out? And some people are trying to say, oh, they're buying high bandwidth memory because the market is so tight. Really? They bought $20 billion of high bandwidth memory? Is that what they have sitting on the shelf, really, guys? Or just maybe this company with a documented history of accounting fraud is lying about being sold out. Maybe liars are lying. Shocking, I know, but it's the 2020s, folks. And of course, I posted this one on X yesterday. Apologies for the fine print, guys. But up in the upper left hand here, that's the revenue beat. They posted $57 billion versus $54.9 billion expected, a beat by about $2 billion. But what we have here on the top is a screenshot of their cash flow statement their balance sheet from this quarter. And then here at the bottom is their cash flow sheet from last quarter. Now, you notice last quarter down here, the one ending in July, they had $27.8 billion of accounts receivable. That's product shipped that they haven't been paid for. And they had $14.9 billion of inventories, stuff sitting on the shelf. This quarter, they've got $33.4 billion of accounts receivable. So an increase of about $5 billion in money they're owed for product they've shipped. And their inventory has gone up to $19.8 billion. So you got about a $5 billion increase in accounts receivable and about a $5 billion increase in inventory. So again, guys, I'm only half kidding. Is NVIDIA just late paying themselves for their own product? this bubble has gotten so ridiculous that we can't rule that out when you see the same growth in inventory as you're seeing in accounts receivables. And no, I don't think that's what's happening here. I just think this company is such a joke that you can't rule that out. And yet people are buying this stock here. It's $195.50, up $9 ahead of the opening bell, or about 4.5%. This thing was up 9% at one point last night. So it's already given up a lot of its post-market gains here. We'll see what this one does, guys. Again, that sell-off in Bitcoin, are we going to see some profit taken at the open? It wouldn't surprise me. And once again, full disclosure, guys, I am short NVIDIA. I own puts in this name. And yes, those puts will be in the red when the market opens. But I bought those out far enough. I'm not worried about it. As a matter of fact, those puts may have some company soon. All right, let's talk about the jobs report here. Total non-farm payrolls for the month of September, mind you. We missed 2 months here, so we are just now getting the September jobs numbers due to the government shutdown. Total non-farm payroll employment edged up to 119,000 in September, but has shown little change since April. That's actually not true. The unemployment rate at 4.4% changed little. That's actually also not true. The unemployment rate went up. Employment continued to trend up in healthcare, food services, and drinking places and social assistance. All jobs not exactly representative of economic prosperity. Job losses occurred in transportation and warehousing, you know, the real economy, and in the federal government, as government layoffs obviously affected the non-farm payrolls. So here's the chart of the jobs that were added here. We got 119,000 jobs added for September. Again, guys, you got to take this with a big asterisk here with all the things that happened in the government, and all of a sudden they're shoving this one out the door. The likelihood of big downward revisions or upward revisions later on is pretty high here. And it's also worth pointing out that the August number was revised lower. It had previously been reported as 22,000 gained. That has been revised down by 26,000 to -4,000. So you subtract that 26 from the 119. Don't make me do math this morning, but yeah, not as good a jobs report as it looks like on the surface. The unemployment rate ticked up to 4.4% from 4.3%. That is three consecutive months of gains in unemployment here. Zooming out to a three-year chart, you can see the pain in the job market starting to accumulate. We are trending up, but still not necessarily alarming when you zoom out to a five-year chart and you get the tail end of the COVID unemployment spike. It doesn't quite look so bad. But again, with the cost of living doing what it's done, slight upticks in unemployment are not good here. The market just cannot easily absorb that. And we've got the labor force participation rate also ticked up a little bit to 62.4% from 62.3% last month. Again, guys, these numbers, I don't have a lot of confidence in them, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. Meanwhile, we got earnings from Walmart. They hiked their sales and earnings forecast as it attracts shoppers across incomes, which means more people are being forced to reluctantly shop at Walmart. Walmart raised its sales and earnings outlook Thursday as the retailer posted sales gains in its fiscal third quarter, driven by double-digit e-commerce growth and new customers across incomes. The retailer said it expects full-year net sales to climb between 4.8 and 5.1%, up from the previous expectation of 3.75% to 4.75%. It said it expects adjusted earnings per share to be $2.58 to $2.63. That's a slight raise by about a penny. They also raised the lower end quite a bit here. It marked the second quarter in a row Walmart hiked its full-year forecast. And again, I'm not sure Walmart reporting good earnings is really that good for everybody else. Comparable sales for Walmart's U.S. stores rose 4.5% in the third quarter, excluding fuel, as compared with the year-ago period. And that surpassed analysts' expectations of 4% growth, according to the Street account. The industry metric, also called same-store sales, includes sales from stores and clubs open for at least a year. So quite a stark contrast between Target's earnings yesterday and Walmart's today. Now, Walmart stock has been kind of volatile ahead of the open. It was down for a little while. Now it's up 3%, $103.60 for Walmart shares. And that stock was already up 11.4% year to date. So good year for Walmart, because it's a bad year for pretty much everybody else. Bath & Body Works, meanwhile, getting absolutely clobbered on their earnings here. They cut their 2025 guidance on weak demand and tariffs. Look, this, I'm not going to spend too much time on this one. Bath & Body Works, nobody really cares that much unless you work for this company. But these specialty retailers are just getting clobbered here. They lowered their earnings, or they lowered their forecast, their forward guidance. Their earnings stunk. But look at what's happening to the stock here, down 24%. $15.95 for the specialty retailer. And, you know, those two stories, more people shopping at Walmart, buying their food at Walmart, nobody going to Bath & Body Works. I mean, that's indicative of the consumer environment we're in. But, hey, Jensen's Ponzi scheme is doing great, so number go up, and that's going to work right up until it doesn't. Palo Alto also topped earnings expectations and announced the Chronosphere acquisition. Again, we're running a little short on time here. We've been going for a while, but I'm going to go through this one. Palo Alto, it was a slight beat. It wasn't great, but this company has been on an acquisition bender lately. They're already buying CyberArk for several billion dollars. Now they're buying this Chronosphere company for $3.35 billion. Palo Alto's spending a lot of money on these acquisitions. Their revenue and earnings are growing slowly, but considering the amount of money they're throwing around, they're not growing very much, and it seems like investors are tiring of that a little bit here. Palo Alto stock is down a tick here. They lost 0.5% yesterday, down about another 0.8% today, $198.19 off an earnings beat. And year-to-date, this stock was already up about 9.8%. So, you know, I guess not that bad considering the year they've had, but it's time to start showing some growth from all of these acquisitions. I think that's what shareholders are saying. Meanwhile, private credit. We are going to spend some time on this one because this is getting worse. BlackRock Private Credit CLO fails key tests as bad loans mount. Shout out to my friends in MacroEdge who caught this one last night. Everybody was hyperventilating over NVIDIA earnings, and they tried to slip this one through the cracks while that was happening. But MacroEdge caught it. Great bunch of guys over there. A portfolio of private credit loans managed by BlackRock has performed so poorly that money managers have waived some management fees, a rarity in the credit world. By the way, when you see waived management fees, that doesn't mean what you think it means. Trust me, it's not coming out of their end. The asset manager funded the loans by selling bonds known as collateralized loan obligations or CLOs, which means the portfolio has to perform well enough to regularly pass a series of tests. Failing to clear those hurdles can spur BlackRock to take steps to right the ship through, for example, automatically diverting interest income away from riskier tranches and towards safer securities. Okay, so they're saying like, yeah, we had to waive some management fees, which means the people at the on the bottom floor were taking money from them and we're giving it to the people on the upper floors. It doesn't mean like, oh, we're working for free because we didn't do a bad job. Sounds so benevolent, but no, it just means they're robbing Peter to pay Paul. In October, the portfolio value declined enough to breach an over-collateralization test, which means the value of the vehicle's loans was too low compared to the highest rated bonds. The fee deferral, which included cash from the deal's riskiest tranches, the bottom floor investors, helped rectify the October breach, according to a person familiar with the matter who asked not to be identified. A BlackRock representative, of course, declined to comment. The BlackRock CLO in question, named BlackRock Baker CLO 2021-1, contains loans to a slew of troubled companies. One of those is Renovo Home Partners, which filed for bankruptcy earlier this month. BlackRock drastically revised to zero the value of private debt it had extended to the home improvement company after deeming it worth 100 cents on the dollar just some weeks before, Bloomberg earlier reported. That beautifully captures what a shit show private credit is. All right, this CLO is taking all these losses. They're robbing the people in the riskier tranches to make up for losses to people in the higher levels, all because of a loan that went bad from this Renovo Home Partners, which is a company that's basically a private equity gaggle of mom and pop home improvement stores that they bought up, put them all together, and created Renovo Home Partners. They defaulted on their loans just a few days after BlackRock took a look at that loan and said, yep, a number one AAA rated credit. And then a few weeks later, they go from 100 cents to worthless. It's almost like there's no price discovery whatsoever. Now this CLO is taking a hit from that. Another loan is to educational software provider Pluralsight, which private credit lenders took ownership of last year, which means the company didn't pay their debt, and so the lenders just seized the company, another zombie. The CLO also holds debt provided by Astra Acquisition Corp, which filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy in September, according to a report from the deal's trustee, Wilmington Trust. In other words, this CLO is full of garbage that is not accurately marked to market. Now the losses are piling up. And of course, the covenants in these things say the people who bought the riskier tranches, they get the highest interest rate, but they take all the risk. And when the money starts to go bad, they are the first ones to take the losses, and they're taking the losses now. BlackRock is also grappling with another soured investment. The firm's recently acquired HPS Investment Partners has zeroed out roughly $150 million in debt to companies run by little-known businessman Bankim Brombot. Remember that video? Some of which are now facing allegations of fraud as well as federal probes. That guy just basically made up fake collateral, fake invoices, and then borrowed money against it. Yep. And then BlackRock went and bought HPS Partners, and now all of that debt from Bankim Brombot is going bad. That's going to hit BlackRock as well. But remember, guys, the losses in private credit, Jamie Dimon's cockroaches, isolated event, totally contained. It's just contained in other places now. The containment is spreading. Doesn't that sound good? Sounds a lot better, doesn't it? Sounds better than contagion risk. Oh, speaking of contagion risk, Blue Owl Money Machine sputters in face of private credit cracks. Yeah, this just keeps getting better. Blue Owl Capital's Craig Packer has been something of a mainstay in New York Stock Exchange in recent years, ringing the opening bell multiple times to toast the private credit giant's public funds. On Wednesday, minute after the market opened, his mood was anything but celebratory. Blue Owl had just announced it was scrapping a planned merger of two of its private credit funds, backtracking on a plan revealed November 5th after scrutiny arose over the potential losses some investors would have to swallow as part of the deal. The parent company's shares had fallen this week to the lowest level since 2023. Packer bemoaned negative articles about private credit that caused the stock to sink. Oh, yeah, it's the bad vibes making my stock go down, not the fact that my investors are losing 20%. It's those vibes. I'm telling you, they get you every time. When it comes to Blue Owl's business development companies, the firm's co-founder said on CNBC, there's no emergency here other than the 20% haircut we're making our investors take while freezing withdrawals. The abrupt reversal in a rare egg on face moment for Blue Owl, which for years has been held up as the poster child of the boom times in the $1.7 trillion private credit market, created as a merger between Owl Rock Capital and DL Capital Partners in 2021. It has pitched itself as a one-stop financing shop that can compete with banks and the biggest alternative asset managers. The attempted merger is also placing new scrutiny on Blue Owl as it looks to transition away from the last vestiges of older fund models and into financing data center expansion for Meta. Oh, yeah, you know, the investors in our last fund are losing 20%, but don't worry, this money that we're putting into data centers, that's going to do really well, even though those data centers don't make any money and we're hiding it off balance sheet. So it doesn't, it's going to be great. You're going to love it. Blue Owl had tried to merge its smaller private fund, Blue Owl Capital Corp. II, into its larger publicly traded OBDC at a time when it was trading at roughly 20% discount to the net asset value of its portfolio. We are very frustrated by the discount, Packer said. Darn those vibes. We've used buybacks when the stock had been at this level before, and so it's logical to think that we could be using it now. OBDC announced a $200 million share repurchase program around the time of the merger announcement. The private fund, which offers investors the option to withdraw their cash quarterly, has seen a surge in the number of investors' requests to cash out. In the third quarter, the vehicle approved about $60 million of redemptions, exceeding its preset limit, filing showed. If redemptions start to pick up, which they're sure to do now, which some market participants are expecting to occur, managers may have to gate the fund to block further exits because they don't have the money to pay people back. They'd have to sell assets and then find out what those assets are really worth, which is a lot less than they're claiming. Blue Owl stopped accepting redemptions for the private fund when it announced the merger, but has since said it plans to reinstate that program in the first quarter of next year. And I guess we'll just have to see what happens to this Blue Owl fund when they allow people to take their money out. I suspect there's going to be a stampede for the exits, and they're going to have to slam that door shut right away. But don't worry, guys. Blue private credit, it's great. The problem is just vibes. Meanwhile, Verizon has cut non-union workforce by 20% in cost-slashing campaign. We talked about the rumor of this earlier this week, guys. Now we've got confirmation. 13,000 people are getting laid off at Verizon. There's the asterisk for that non-farm payrolls report. But here's what I want to zero in on. This is brutal. The dismissals extend to employees at every level across all parts of the business, including retail workers, customer service reps, and senior executives. The bulk of affected employees will be off Verizon's payroll by the end of the year. It's November 20th. You got Thanksgiving, Christmas, everything between now and then. They're going to lay off 13,000 people right before Christmas. Employees can expect further restructuring in the coming weeks, Shulman said, which means there might be even more layoffs coming. That is absolutely brutal. Usually you wait until January to do this. If they're doing this in December, it means there is some serious urgency behind this. Look, we also got this China story. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but China waives new property stimulus package as crisis lingers. China tried property stimulus last year. It had a very muted effect for like a month or two. You saw home sales stop falling. They ticked up a little bit, but I'd barely say they went up. But they just resumed falling right away afterward. Now they're talking about another stimulus package. You got a little bit of movement in things like zinc and copper this morning off of this news. But I just want to zero in on the why. China has been trying to put a floor under its four-year real estate downturn, which has weighed on everything from household wealth to consumption and employment. That is a big problem in China because of the wealth effect, because homes stopped going up in value. People stopped buying stuff in China. They stopped consuming, and that is starting to cause a decline in employment. This is not a virtuous cycle. This is a doom loop of feedback, especially when you throw the tariffs on top of this. While the housing sector picked up modestly after the government stepped up support about a year ago, the momentum quickly fizzled. Home sales have been falling since the second quarter, and fixed asset investment collapsed last month. The dim outlook for the property market, coupled with households' weakened ability to repay mortgages and other personal loans, means that banks' asset quality could deteriorate next year. Fitch Ratings analysts warned last month, Chinese banks' bad loans surged to a record 3.5 trillion yuan, or $492 billion at the end of September. Again, big problems brewing in China, guys. We've got our own problems here on this side of the Pacific. And while we're at it, I just want to send a big shout out to all you adorable Chinese G-bots who show up in my comments. I love your bad grammar. Thank you for the engagement. And last but not least, this is a wild story. And yes, this touches my channel. Shout out to my moderator, Mish, who sent me this one. And he didn't even realize the overlap here because I just remember this from some research I was doing earlier this year. Fugitive Olympic snowboarder indicted for murder and drug charges. All right. 2020's bingo update, I guess. A Canadian former Olympian accused by the FBI of running one of the world's largest cocaine networks now has a $15 million bounty on his head. Federal officials said Ryan James Wedding, once a snowboarder at the 2002 Winter Games in Salt Lake City, built a billion-dollar drug enterprise with Mexico's Sinaloa cartel and ordered the murder of a witness in Colombia. Wedding, 43, has been on the FBI's 10 most wanted list since March. On Wednesday, the State Department increased the reward for his capture to $15 million from $10 million. The U.S. government also offered $2 million for information leading to the arrest of those involved in the killing of the witness. A new indictment unsealed on Wednesday in Washington and Los Angeles adds charges of witness tampering, intimidation, murder, money laundering, and drug trafficking to a case that already names more than 35 defendants. And look, guys, there's a reason why this touches my channel, because this guy Wedding and his 34 co-defendants are all working for the Kinahan drug cartel. And you may remember the Kinahan drug cartel from this video that went entirely ignored by the press, the Hyperscale Nexus story. Does anybody remember Hyperscale Nexus from last year? That was the AI startup that was going to buy $1.3 billion worth of NVIDIA chips, and they were going to merge with the American cannabis company and take the company public and buy all these chips. And oh my God, all these guys out of Dubai, it was so great, so big. And then we found out, thanks to an anonymous tip, by the way, shout out to that anonymous melonhead, that the CEO of the company, this guy, Thomas Stray, is actually Thomas Oye, a convicted money launderer who shares an office with Daniel Kinahan, the head of the Kinahan cartel, the same guy who hired this snowboarding a-hole to kill people and smuggle drugs in Canada. 3 days after I ran this video, Hyperscale Nexus disappeared from existence. They canceled their merger with American Cannabis Company. American Cannabis stock has fallen by 99% since I released that video. Not one journalist in the world picked up this story. Not one. No mention of a nobody YouTuber breaking up a $1.3 billion money laundering drug cartel story that was hiding in plain sight as an AI bubble startup. Nobody mentioned it because we must protect the AI bubble at all costs, even if it means letting billions of dollars of drug money get laundered in the process. Not one journalist picked up the phone or sent me a message interested in running a story about this. Amazing, isn't it? Just amazing what goes on in this, in the world of finance here. But hey, I'm not mad. Oh, I'm so mad about that. All right. I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Brian Vlad 451, who became a new member. Welcome, Vlad the Impaler Melonhead. I appreciate that very much. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Chuck G says, I walked 15,000 steps yesterday, so should the rest of the melon cult praise the melon king? Sorry, we'll take melon head in chief, all right? We don't do monarchy here or communism or any of that. You know, don't worry. I'm the emperor of the People's Republic of Jakistan. I'm a kind and benevolent dictator. Congratulations on your 15,000 steps. Get up, get moving. Remember, the most important part of your wealth is your health. Thank you, Charles. Good advice there. Art Vandelay, the guy who pretends he's an architect, he says, not so loud, Jack. You'll spook the exit liquidity. Oh, sorry. Did I let the exit liquidity cat out of the bag? Yeah. Sorry, Art. I got to call him like I see him, brother. Thank you very much for supporting the channel, sir. PP Poo Poo says, hey, Jack, thanks for all you do for us people with the small melon heads. You've mentioned interviewing others. What about Chris Irons and Gareth Soloway? I like both of those guys. I'm familiar with both of those names. Good analysts with a grip on reality. Thank you, Mr. 4P, for the recommendations. I appreciate that, guys. I am constantly sending out invites for, what's the word I'm looking for? For interviews. Sometimes we get a bite. Sometimes we don't. That's how that works. But good recommendations. I like both of those names. Thank you, sir. Grumpa, who's been a melonhead for 21 months, says 36% of adults in America are not employed. That is awful. We got 1 in 8 Americans are on food stamps. 1 in 3 are not working. But it's the best economy ever. Our chief exports are inflation and Ponzi schemes. Never mind that the real world economy is frozen in place. Thank you, Grumpa. That's a mind-blowing statistic. Jason Bennett's been a melonhead for 18 months. Thank you, Jason, for supporting the channel. He says, I think Jack's right. Jensen was ramping up retail enthusiasm for exit liquidity. We're going to see red today. I wouldn't be surprised to see it. I mean, look, the opening bell is wrong right now. I don't know, man. We saw a lot of this with the Oracle earnings, right? They reported that big remaining performance obligations, just like the $500 billion backlog. People bought the stock, and then the chumps who bought the stock on that news just watched it go right down from there. They were absolutely exit liquidity. So will that play out again? We'll just have to wait and see, Jason. But thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Alex L says 100% double count inventory and accounts receivable. Hey, man, let's not rule anything out, all right? Again, everybody's overlooking the fact that NVIDIA has a proven track record of accounting fraud. They had to settle with the SEC for faking their earnings. This was all the way back, like right after they replaced Enron, I kid you not, in the S&P 500. NVIDIA replaced Enron. That's fun. So once you have a proven record of accounting fraud, it's not crazy to say they're doing fraud again, especially when they go from a second-tier company to $5 trillion in a span of 4 years. That warrants scrutiny. Where the hell are the regulators on this story? Where the hell are the journalists on this story? Oh, that's right. They're all busy telling people not to listen to me while ignoring the $1.3 billion drug money laundering operation that I broke up. Silly rabbit. Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it. Hey, Alex is back again. Says, if CoreWeave defaults on bonds at the end of 2026, then the dominoes begin. Well, what are you saying? That CoreWeave doesn't have the money to pay for all the stuff they've promised? That's crazy. Oh, and is that why CoreWeave's credit default swaps are trading at 700 basis points right now? Maybe, yes, yeah, 7% to insure their debt against default in the next 5 years. That is the market saying, hell no, these guys can't pay. But hey, Michael and Trader said a bunch of things about, you know, when you're trying to build something and so big, there's customer cooperation lying through his teeth. Oh my God, worst poker player in history. Yeah, CoreWeave. Let's just say when that one goes belly up, there will be the mother of all I told you so's coming from me on that one. Thank you, Alex, for everything you do for the channel, sir. Duke Dookie, the double D, says, great reporting, Travis. Is there a Travis here? But I digress. How do you see the contagion going down while the yen carry trade is unwinding? Look, I don't know that the yen carry trade is unwinding right now. We are seeing the yen weaken, but we're also seeing yen borrowing costs rise. So, you know, typically with the yen carry trade unwinding, you'd see a sudden strengthening in the yen to go along with the higher borrowing costs. We're not seeing that yen strengthening. So that's not happening yet. But I would say the first place you're going to see it is crypto, because crypto is always the most overlevered and the most ridiculous, immediately followed by your big tech names and some of your more highly levered tech names like your CoreWeave or Oracle. They'll be the ones that go down first. NVIDIA, though, NVIDIA and OpenAI, those are like the two, the king and the queen there. Those two, when they go down, all hell breaks loose. Thank you very much, Dookie Dookie and Travis. Whoever you are, wherever you are, hey, shout out to Real Estate Mindset while we're talking about Travis. Ed C. says, thanks for everything you do, Jack. Well, Ed C., thank you very much for being a Melonhead member for 9 months and for supporting the channel. I really appreciate that. And Nashville Pasta Man says, 13,000 people finally get to pursue their real passions. Hey, now we're putting a positive spin on that. What's that movie with, what's his name? Oh, son of a George Clooney, Up in the Air. Right. When he goes around, flies around the country, laying people off, making it sound all positive. Oh, you're free to pursue your passions. And then ironically, he gets laid off at the end of the movie. Yeah. All right. Maybe we're just looking at this all wrong. Maybe we need to view this from the standpoint of all the opportunity that lays before us as we're losing our job right before Christmas. See, you just got to put a positive spin on this. Just don't be such a doomer, Jack. Thank you, Pasta Man, for that dose of optimism this early in the morning. Appreciate that. Just some positive waves, baby. The internal dialogue says, familiar with forward flow agreements, ties to Klarna news, lenders selling risky loans to non-bank financial institutions to shift balance sheet risk, in my opinion, thoughts. I agree with to zero in on Klarna there and the NBFIs or the shadow banks, if you will. Klarna and Affirm, by the way, the defaults and the delinquencies that they're claiming on their buy now, pay later debt does not pass the sniff test. We are watching credit card defaults skyrocket, auto loan defaults skyrocket to the highest level since Cash for Clunkers 2009, student loan defaults skyrocketing to all-time highs after years of telling people they didn't have to pay them. And we're sitting here, we're supposed to believe that buy now, pay later debt that is rubber stamped and automatically approved to freaking anybody and there's no recourse, there's nothing to repossess, that somehow those delinquencies are only sitting at 2.5%. No freaking way. They're lying about it. They're hiding the losses somewhere. I don't know how, but then they're getting that crap off their balance sheets into asset-backed securities and into your retirement. And yeah, that deal with Klarna, who was it? Elliot was buying billions of dollars worth of their ABS. That's going to blow up in somebody's face. And as always, it's going to be working class schmucks who eat the cost of this, because these guys are just collecting the fees along the way and then getting it off their books. Abso-freaking-lutely, the internal dialogue. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Ed C. says, Verizon still has a lot of outsourced, possibly offshore workers. I wonder if they'll be impacted. Well, if they're contract workers, when you cut contract workers, I don't think that counts as a layoff. They just cut the contract. So it's possible that's going on, but it was not included in that 13,000 number. And yeah, if they've got a lot of contract people, then I'm sure they're cutting them too, if they're cutting their employees. And look at where they're cutting a lot of customer service people. I mean, Jesus, the customer service when you call up most of these outfits is already so awful. That's if you're lucky enough to actually get in touch with a human being, you know, and not a freaking chatbot. And then if you do get in touch with a human being and not a chatbot, it's probably a guy who says, hello, my name is Steven. Yeah, your name is definitely not Steven. But yeah, customer service sucks and it's getting suckier. So not good. And I hate to see people losing their jobs right before Christmas. That's just awful. Thank you so much, Ed, for supporting the channel. Alex gifted 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you so much, Alex, for everything. You are awesome, brother. 20 new melon heads in the melon patch. Hey, guys, be sure and say thank you to Alex if you got one of those. And just a reminder, melon heads, you get one free super chat a month. Use that, and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. The Double D is back again. He says, sorry, I meant Jack, not Travis. Apology accepted, Dookie. You didn't have to spend $5 to say that, but I appreciate the sentiment anyway. I watched your channel and Economic Ninja. Okay, so the other Travis. There are multiple Travi circling the channel. Okay, thank you very much, Dookie. Appreciate the support either way. Pocket Jack's Comics. No relation. He's a new YouTube member. Welcome to the Melonhead, Pocket Jacks. Appreciate that very much, sir. Marantz Rants, what's going on, sir? He says, NVIDIA, 45% of revenue is accounts receivable in 2024. Now 59% of accounts receivable in 2025. Nothing to see here. Very good point there, Marantz Rants. They're creating their own demand. Keep digging. You know, on that note, Marantz, there's some people that are out there that are saying last quarter accounts receivable or days sales outstanding was 54 days. And this quarter, days sales outstanding was 53 days. And therefore, that shows that the whole accounts receivable argument is bunk. And to that, I have to say, guys, 54 or 53 days sales outstanding worth of accounts receivable is dreadful, is 100% a red flag suggesting channel stuffing. And just because you went from 54 to 53, meaning you went from absolutely terrible to absolutely terrible minus one, doesn't mean you're not channel stuffing. Good God, what relentless optimism. You guys, your feet are on fire and you're saying this is fine. I've been trying to warn you for years about this. Thank you so much, Marantz Rants. I intend to keep digging. I'm Jack Gamble and I got a shovel and I intend to use it. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate the support of the channel. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys on the way out. Appreciate that very much. Thank you so much for the super chats, as well as you magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube, Patreon, Buy Me a Coffee. Links down below to all that good stuff, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small and dream big.